Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. Going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones, and this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
And once again, this show is being brought to you and reminding you you're not in good hands if you're with Allstate. I promised them I'd do it every week until they fixed their stinking issues.
Nice. So, you know, I'm glad that I get to be a part of that. And for our listeners, you know, you just couldn't keep away, right? That's why you're back. They always come back, Pete. We tried to get away and then we came back.
What's funny is too, you know, I was telling you before we started the podcast that I'm talking to this dude who like introduced another dude to Peyton. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, I read his book Church Zero years ago. And I almost wanted to go, hey, that was a horrible cover, wasn't it?
But I didn't. I was just telling someone about why that cover was Japanese. And I was telling him because I wanted the two manga robots fighting each other. And the publisher was like, yeah. And it was basically two ideologies, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots or whatever, like have the two ideologies fighting on the cover of you know, what church ought to be and what it ought to look like. And They were like, yeah, let's just throw them a bone. Let's just do something Japanese. And of course, what publishers always do is give you three covers and one's really good and the other two really suck. They've already chosen the cover, but they want you as the author to feel like you did. So you're like, yeah, I'll take the second one. And they're like, great choice.
Right. Right.
That's how it always works.
Well, it was funny. I used to work at a video game company before I got married and I was talking with, the head of HR, because I worked in the HR department, and she was telling me that when she was over on the creative side and she was like a supervisor over there, she's like, oh yeah, we'd always put a duck in the artwork so that way the next guy up could go, remove the duck, otherwise it's good. Like if you don't give them nice. Something to complain about, like they'll be picking apart your stuff that you know is really good. So you just give them something that you know, and that's why we always call it, oh, just put a duck in it. Just put a duck.
I love that. Holy crap. I love that. That's amazing. Well, hey, man, let's look. I don't have any smack. I watched this movie you told me to watch and I'm ready to get into the topic.
Dude. Wait, I've got two sound bites. One is actually from Travis, who we were talking about before the call.
Okay.
He goes, I'm so happy you guys have the sound machine back. So he sent us this sound bite.
I made my money the old fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis.
Woo! I love
Welcome
it.
Welcome back.
I love it. All right, here we go.
Great Scott, it's time for this week's topic.
Let's get out of the meeting.
Oh, I love that. It just makes me feel so good.
He's so excited about it. He can't stop himself from speaking over top of it. That's how Dude, giddy he is.
I start doing Zoom calls with my professional business people, and I start hearing, what you going to do when the smack talk's coming for you? And they're like, what's going on? What's going on?
Are you serious?
No, but I should.
Oh, that would be so rad. what you gonna do when the Church Planner Podcast runs wild over you? Oh, yeah. Good stuff, man. I forgot about that one.
So I asked Peyton to watch a movie that Jamie and I watched last week. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a rental. It's called Super Spreader. And we both had mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
But the reason why I actually asked you to watch it was because of some of the comments they were making about the youth. And I was like, oh, dude, that's like right in line with what Peyton was talking about on our podcast. I think we actually watched it last Wednesday. And I can't even remember exactly what one of the comments was, but it like hit me between the eyes because the dude was like, you know, they're looking for meaning. They're looking for purpose in life. And it was really making me think about, you know, what you were talking about with the youth are in a lot of ways neglected by the church. Like we talked about, you know, on the podcast last week, how, you know, when you get started in ministry, you know, maybe you're a youth pastor, maybe you're the children's pastor, and then you get upgraded to youth pastor, and then you become the associate pastor, and then you become the senior pastor, but you never go backwards. Like it's never the senior pastor is going to be a youth pastor.
Right.
That just doesn't happen in our world. But yet it's almost like we're going, well, these aren't as important as, you know, being the senior pastor. And you were bringing up the fact that in your church plant, half of it's like under 18. And it's, I mean, the youth are in large part neglected.
I actually think, yeah, absolutely. I actually think that much of what I learned in ministry and what made me missional was that I was a youth pastor. I think because there is such a heavy need for discipleship. You know, if you look at Jeff Vanderstelt, who was on staff at Bill Hybels Church, he was a youth pastor. And it was while he was discipling the youth in his group that he had his epiphany, like, I don't think we're supposed to be doing church the way we're doing it because we're called to make this. And that's where the missional community thing was born out of these microgroups that he created in his youth group. That's where Soma came out of, which, you know, kind of kickstarted the missional community revival. I don't mean revival in the sense of spiritual revival. I mean like the resurgence of missional community because that's come and gone throughout time. Many people probably don't realize that John Wesley was probably the biggest kickstarter of that in the 1700s. That's how Methodism started. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the reason why I told you should watch it so we could talk about it because the movie Super Spreader is all about, I can't even remember the name of it. Let's Worship. Is that what it was? Or Let's.
Yeah, it was Let's Worship.
Let Us Worship. Yeah. So apparently there's this dude. Honestly, I can't even remember his name.
Sean Foyt.
Sean. Okay.
Who was the lead worship pastor at Bethel. He's the guy with the like kind of curlyish red. He looks like Simply Red. Remember him? Holding back the years. Yeah, so 80s thing. He looks like the Christian version of Simply Red.
Okay.
I hope if Sean Foyt, if you're listening, and I know you're not, hopefully that didn't offend you, but you do. You look a bit like him. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it as an insult.
So what it was it was like it started as his personal protest against the lockdowns, the COVID lockdowns. And like he was personally really offended, bent out of shape. I think justifiably so, by the way, when they specifically targeted churches and said churches aren't allowed to sing. I mean, I actually remember our church not singing. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, this is church. This is what we do. We worship God. And worship involves singing. Like, that just throughout all time, it's involved singing. And he was really offended at, well, we're going to let casinos, that's essential, but you churches aren't essential. I mean, completely unconstitutional stuff, which you and I talked about during COVID. I mean, it really was.
You and I kind of called it way back in the beginning. Like we were talking about it. And even Sean Foyt on the thing, and I'm not in agreement with a lot of what I saw him do. And hey, we can all disagree, but he made a statement towards the end of the film where he said, look, All of my family are doctors and nurses. I knew COVID was a thing. I wasn't a COVID denier. So, you know, when you find the extremes of people that were COVID, you and I heard it. And of course, I'm an RN. And back when it happened, you and I were both, we were like, well, you know, I said, I'm seeing a lot of panic. This is early on, seeing a lot of panic and a lot of fear, which when you don't believe that you have a soul and this life is all there is, and they tell you some life-threatening, like that's where you just saw the cornered caged animal come out, like the viciousness, because this life is all people have. So they were like, you know, like if you threaten me, that's where all the nastiness came from. But there, I called on the podcast early on and I wondered, will I regret this statement? But I said, and I was careful. I said, hey, I can't speak to what the virus is or isn't, but what I can say is I'm seeing the fear and the mass hysteria right now as being the greater problem. And they bring that out a little bit in the film. Of course, we've gone on to see a lot of corruption. Like, we don't get the news here that they do in Britain. Like, Pfizer had they had done so many, like, the British government's going after Pfizer.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah. For the stuff that was pulled during the pandemic there, there's been a lot of consequences. It's crazy, man. Like the stuff that came out, there was a lot of money floating around during the pandemic. Yep. I mean, that was the amount of money that was made was insane. And, you know, there was a lot of problems. Like when they released thousands of inmates here in the state of California, like everything became like kind of back in the day, El Nino. Sorry, I was late. El Nino. Remember back when Nino hurricane came and everyone back in the 90s would like for like a year or two, everything was El Nino. Sorry. El Nino's affected my business or, you know, whatever it was. And what ended up happening with this was the government, we knew that the prisons were overcrowded. And they said, oh, it's to stop the spread of the virus, we'll release thousands. Basically, the government was just like, hey, we can't afford and we got a prison problem. Hey, COVID would be a great excuse to release a bunch of people that we shouldn't, but we can't afford to keep. And that's what happened.
And at the same time, if you went to church, they would arrest you.
Yes, indeed.
In some places. And, you know, I still remember, do you remember that scene? Because they showed it in the movie and I remembered it in real life when the dude was out by himself on his stand-up paddleboard and like they're trying to arrest him because you're supposed to be at home, you're supposed to be on lockdown,
right?
And it's like, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah. Dude is by himself, can't possibly spread anything on the ocean,
right?
And you're gonna arrest him and throw him in jail meanwhile
on a paddleboard out in the ocean out. Like around the you know level of the end of the pier is pretty social distance in my opinion. But yeah, no, there was a lot of power grab and government overreach. And I think that's...
And the thing is government doesn't give up its power.
Right.
Like it likes to set precedents. I mean, in the way you can always think of it is this, you know, whenever they put in a bridge, right, and they start a toll, it's to pay for the bridge. But right. The toll never goes away.
Right.
After the bridge has been paid for, because it's right. Like, well, now everyone's used to paying. We're going to keep it. And I think that's what they kind of wanted to do with COVID. It's like, hey, you know what? We don't have the right to shut down these churches. We don't have a right to shut down gun stores, which they shut down in California specifically, went after gun stores. You know, we don't have the legal right to do, oh, we're going to use COVID as the excuse.
Right.
And literally only because of the fact that there are some judges that still respect the Constitution. I still remember when John MacArthur sued and ended up winning. You know, and gets like 800,000 from the county that tried to shut him down. They're like, look, you don't have the right to shut us down. We have a constitution that we've all agreed to. This is our law of the land. You can't do this to us.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only thing that kind of backfired on them was actually having judges that respected the constitution enough to go, no, you actually can't do the stuff that you're doing. But it still took forever to happen.
Yeah.
And there's still this groundwork that's been laid for the next, you know, quote unquote emergency. Where they want to do stuff.
I think that was the point of the movie. Now, I was trying to watch a movie and figure out, like, what's the point of this movie? Like, what are they saying? In the very beginning, I thought, oh, this is Sean Foyt's movie. Like, he made this movie about himself. And then as the movie unfolded, they were interviewing people from all over the spectrum. And it actually seemed like it was following his story. But here's, if I just give you in like 2 minutes, my take on the movie, it didn't really set the precedent of why he was doing what he was doing, other than the government told us we couldn't sing. I'm a worship leader. And they also brought out that he ran for like third district of California and didn't win. And his life was, you know, he was all disenchanted and, you know, upset at God. And
see, I remember, by the way, I'm going to comment on that right now.
Yeah.
When I watched that, my first gut reaction, because he was so like gut punched that he lost, right. But right. They showed that one scene where it was like, you saw how many votes he got, how many votes the guy above him got, and how much like tremendously more the Democrat got. And it was like, okay, if you actually thought you were going to win, you kind of living in your own little world. Like, I was like,
he's not from living, Bethel, though.
I'm like, you're not living in reality.
So when you have enough people laying hands on you and prophesying and saying, you're going to be, you know, you're the man, you know, God's going to bring you into public, you're going to win the election. And you got enough people prophesying on you that, then you do believe, oh, we're going to, you know, it's going to be supernatural. We're going to defy the odds. God's chosen me to be there, yada, yada. And, you know, the movie doesn't say that happened, but being that he was from Bethel,
right.
I mean, you know, Bethel's a place where they prayed for a child to raise from the dead and kept the corpse in the sanctuary or wherever it was on the church premises for days, I think close to a week. It was like 5 days before someone blew the whistle. Like, one of the things that's going to come out in this podcast for me is, you know, Apes Gone Wild. When you leave prophets to themselves for too long, those are the kinds of things that happen. Now, I'm watching this guy. He is clearly of the evangelist camp. The way that he's throwing events, like almost like little crusades, pop-up crusades. That's, for those of you listening, that's what he does. Is he decides, first thing he does, he goes to the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, and they just walk across there and start praying. And the cop shows up, he tells a story, the cop tears up and says, we were waiting for you guys because everybody's jumping off this bridge right now, which is a problem anyways, but yeah. You know, during COVID,
you want to get rocked, watch a movie called The Bridge.
Oof.
It's a documentary on Michael Cheshire is the one that actually turned me onto it.
Really?
And they average every 14 days someone jumps off the bridge. And so they set up a camera in the park, not telling the park the real reason they were setting the camera was just to shoot the bridge so they could get the people jumping off.
Oh, no way.
Like, that's how many people jump off the Golden Gate Bridge every 14 days on average. So who knows what it was in COVID?
Like, yeah, I have no idea. So anyways, he starts going to all these places, and I will just tell you, the movie gives, it's a critique in many ways of American Christianity, but only in the sense where it interviews people on one side. Then it comes back and interviews people like Eric Metaxas and others who, Josh Hawley's on it, who are very much like, you know, Christian, what do they call it? Christian nationalism. It's like, at the end of the movie, I'm like, I don't know what this movie is saying. It actually looked like it was a spectator movie.
Mm.
Like it didn't have an axe to grind. It's showing you, this is what was, this is what happened. It seems at times pro Foyt, and then at times it seems not pro Foyt. And that's how I like my documentary, you know, is I don't quite know what you're saying other than. And then towards the end, they make the point that the government overreach is a real problem. And if we don't stand up, we're going to lose this country to communism. The movie doesn't seem to be saying that, but it interviews a couple of people. But then it goes back to Shane Claiborne, who says, hey, look, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was really interesting to me to watch, because the whole time I'm watching it, I wasn't sure if you were telling me like, hey, watch this thing because it was super cool and awesome. And I'm watching, I'm deeply disturbed during the entire film.
Well, what's funny is that the big takeaway for me as I was watching the movie And that wasn't even the reason I wanted you to watch it. It was literally, I thought they had really cool insight on the youth. Because as they're doing all these, like you call them mini crusades, these pop-up worship things in all these troubled cities, they're attracting a lot of people. I mean, people are getting baptized. The youth are coming. And I just thought it was really interesting what they were talking about the youth. But as I was watching the movie, again, I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, this is a documentary. This isn't, I don't know this guy's story. I mean, Jamie and I were both like, how did we not hear about this going on? Because we were so like, I can't believe the government is trying to shut down all these churches. And he's literally putting on these events all over the place and worshiping. But as I was watching it, I was like, okay, so are there no teachers and shepherds to pull these guys back in? Like, literally, that was the thought going through my head. I'm like, but it could just be the documentary and they're just showing us one side.
He's an evangelist. That's exactly what he... Okay, so this was my take on everything going on. And, you know, I don't know Sean, and I can't judge the dude. And I definitely said I'm coming onto this podcast, you know, speaking... I don't want to say anything that I would regret or anything that's unfair to him, right? So let me just say it's how I feel about Driscoll. That's what happens when you leave an evangelist alone too long. Because I remember watching the news. I remember reading articles from various sources about him. And it was like, hey, check out this jerkhole. This is a summary of the thing. Like out there spreading, you know, the virus. Like they've got mandates for people's safety. And this guy says, no, Jesus told me to come out here and amass huge crowds of people and give people hope. And I remember going, huh. So everybody's afraid for their lives. And the whole law is summed up, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. Dude, I see how this might seem like you're trying to love God with all your heart. I do not see how this is loving your neighbor. This right here, I don't want to be associated with church that goes, screw people's safety. You know, let's go meet in public space, not wear masks, not social distance. To me, it was like, and they showed pastors, like they showed that really cool pastor in Skid Row. I'm sure that Kirk Overstreet knows him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a guy, he had, Church Without Walls down in Skid Row. And I can't remember his name, but I'm sure Kirk Overstreet knows him. But he was like, you're going to come into my neighborhood. He actually was forming blockades to keep them out. He's like, you can come into my neighborhood.
Well, and but they were socially distanced, right?
That was it. How are you going to do a blockade?
I mean,
well, they're parking cars. That's how they're doing. They're doing it by parking cars and stuff. And he was just upset. He was like, you know what? How dare you come into my neighborhood and put all these people at risk? And you know, by that, and I remember feeling like, yeah, you don't like nobody can tell you individually what to do. Like with your response to the freedom issue in a situation like this, like, you know, but at the same time, it's like, but you can't say in the name of God, I'm going to go out here and like cough on you during COVID, right? Like that became to a degree assault, physical assault, to cough on someone during COVID. And that actually makes sense in a pandemic. You go cough on somebody. It's like, you know, it's like rubbing your skin on someone. If you're
intentionally coughing on someone. Sure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. People were doing that. People were spitting. Like, I don't know if you saw some of those videos of people in stores back then. They were spitting and coughing on people during COVID when they were being asked to leave stores for not having a mask
on. See, that's just being a jerk. Like flat out, just you're just a jerk. I mean, like my whole thing, even during COVID was, look, I don't care if you want to wear a mask. I don't care if you want to stay home. My thing literally was the freedom issue. You don't have the right to tell someone else they can't go to work and provide for their family.
Right.
I'm sorry, you don't. You cannot force my family to die by not providing for them because you're afraid. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Now, you want to stay home? Like, because I had this conversation with my parents. My mom was like,
I'm with you.
We got to stay home. And I go, well, no one's stopping you from staying home. And I still remember my dad going, Well, yeah, but we don't want you to have any fun either. I'm like, at least you're being honest, right? Like, you want everyone to stay home because you're afraid and you don't want anyone else to go out. But, you know, at least that was an honest response.
Right.
But honestly, I don't have as big of an issue with going out there and doing the worshiping, because the only people who are going to go to that are ones who are attracted to it anyway, or the ones that God's calling to it. I was like, okay, fine. I just was looking at it going, okay, but this is an awful lot of, you know, what you and I would say is the more charismatic side. And I'm like, where's the teacher? Where's the, right, the shepherd? Where's the one that's like balancing out this equation?
They weren't there.
And I mean, it was definitely not in the documentary. Right. And I was like, I don't know, some of these pastors, maybe they're more like that and they're just not showing that side to it. I don't know. But
you know, it's funny, right? Because Paul addresses this in some of the pastoral epistles and also in Thessalonians, where their theology had distorted things to the point where they thought, hey, you know, like Jesus's return in Thessalonians, you know, like we just need to like just worship and not work and not, you know, and Paul's like, hey, and then in the pastorals where he says, look, urge the people to live peaceable lives subject to the authority, because they were like, hey, you're not the boss of me. And yet Christianity had become this liberation theology that all of a sudden was giving Christianity a bad name. They had gone too far. And Paul's like, urge them to live quiet, peaceable lives, to get along with their neighbors, you know, yada, yada, that whole, to work with their hands, like be good citizens, please. Right? For the sake of the witness of Christ. And that was the thing that was bothering me during the pandemic, was the witness that we equated Christianity with, screw all of you. I'm not going to, you know, that bothered me, you know, like, at least if you go out, like, wear a mask for people's safety, you know, even if you don't believe in it, just be cool about it. Like, you don't have to, and, you know, people were over the top. I get it. People were over the top with their mask mandates. It was all fear-based. But, okay, I'll say this. Back when it was a bit like this, and this is maybe not okay. I feel bad for this. But I remember when I was doing firefighter training, they said, hey, we'll give you the car for the fire service. If you go pick this guy, he lives 20, 25 minutes away from you. Can you both use a company car and go to this fire training for 2 weeks? Yeah, okay. So I would pick him up in the morning. We go, you know, an hour and something away, go to fire training, come back, I drop him off. And I was a really bad driver. Like, in other words, I should have been a Fast and Furious before I had Liberty, right? And I would drive so recklessly, dude. And in Britain on those roads, man, like, and this guy kept like flinching and like, you know, in my passenger seat, he was a young guy too. And he'd get all scared. Now, this is a firefighter. This is a guy that puts himself in danger regularly. And he's freaking out and like starting to like that. And And at one point, we're on the road, like at like 5 a.m. And I'm like, hey, just, and I was not considerate because I did not change my behavior. I looked over at him and said, hey, just a heads up. You don't know this, but I'm also a minister. You seem really scared about the way I'm driving. I know where I go, where I'm going when I die.
Ha, oh, ha, no, you did I not. Did.
I no. totally did. And I was trying to, you know, my sense of humor is a bit dark, right? And I was trying to laugh. He did not think that was funny at all. And I, in today's world, you probably get like HR reports for that. But yeah,
so interesting.
And it's not okay, you know. It's like, hey, yeah, no, you're going to hell, but I'm not. And don't worry, I'm not worried if I die. This is only going to be bad for one of us. And yeah, so I think it's a bad look. And I think the church could have and should have done better. If the church wanted to say, hey, we're going to, like, there's a way you could do it where you're like, hey, we're going to comply with this and that. And we'll gather, but we'll wear masks and we'll social distance. I'll never forget watching the Greg Laurie thing and all that. They all went to DC and did that big thing. And then they all got COVID right afterwards. And it was like, And I was like, you guys, they did like this big, I don't know, maybe it's a national.
Well, the thing is, honestly, you can't even blame that on they got COVID because of that, because they told us all, you're all going to get COVID. I got COVID. Everyone got COVID.
Well, they eventually told us that, remember? See, here's what
they told us from the beginning. The whole reason why Newsom shut down California is like, everyone's going to get it. And we're not going to be able to contain everybody in the hospitals. And it was just like, you knew from the beginning, according to the government, we're all getting it.
And we pretty much all did. I don't know.
We pretty much all did. I don't know anybody who didn't get COVID. Yeah. Like, even if you got the shot.
And I knew people who died. I knew so it was a thing. It wasn't like, you know, and if you gave pushback back then, you were a COVID denier. Like, what I think needs to happen now, and it's very telling that it hasn't happened, is the shutdowns and the mandate that needs to come before Congress. Like, forget all this other crap we're talking about in Congress right now. I'll just say to everybody, nobody's going to jail. Like, just stop. You know, Biden's going to jail this time. Oh, Trump's going to, nobody's going to jail.
Nobody's going. Yeah.
Right. Like, nobody ever goes to jail in this country. Like, Hillary doesn't go to jail. Trump doesn't go to jail. Like, just stop. Nobody's going to jail. It's a waste of time. But what we need to be having hearings about is the government overreach. That needs to be addressed. Whoever brings that up and sees that through is, quite frankly, my hero in DC, in the Capitol, because that is so against the self-interest of the government. The government loved having that power, and both sides want that power.
Both sides. Yeah. This whole idea that it's just one side. Oh, it's just those evil Democrats. It's just those evil Republicans. No, dude.
Yeah.
They both suck up power like a vacuum, man. They want it. Absolutely. They're not going to give it up. I see the way that we handled it at our church, and there were things that they did that I totally disagreed with. Like when they shut down the church, I disagreed with that. And I still disagree with that to this day. I don't care if you want to stay home. I don't care if you want to do it virtually.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not okay with, again, government telling a church specifically, you've got to shut down. Now they all had masks out there. They said, hey, we'd ask that you social distance here in the church. I think that's cool. Again, I'm a personal freedom dude, right? I'm like, look, you want to wear a mask? Wear a mask. You want a social distance? Well, social distance. I got no problem with that. But this, we're going to control you. We're going to tell you, you can't go out on your paddleboard. You can't go to the beach. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
The whole reason why we got all these photos.
I had never ever seen you go to the beach in my life. Pete Mitchell and the beach do not mix, but you were at the beach every single weekend after that.
We're going to the beach. This is not the world I'm living in where you get to tell me what to do.
I think deep down you want to get arrested for going to the beach. You're like, this would be the best day for me ever.
No, because I carry a gun, and then you'd lose your right to carry a gun. And I'd be like,
okay. All right. I got it.
I mean, so I look at it and I'm like, you know, I think, you know, maybe the question that we should be addressing on this podcast, this episode, is, you know, what happens when the next emergency comes around? How should the church be handling it in the next one? And I realized too, because I remember my buddy Kendall, he's one of my oldest friends from college. He and I are night and day in our beliefs. Like, he's very, very liberal and I'm very, very conservative, but we're good friends, right?
Yeah.
And we can talk about these things. And we don't get upset at each other. And it's not like throwing up our hands. I'm never talking to you again. And so I was like, look, I'm not in agreement with them shutting down everything and locking us all up in our homes for this.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, what if it was, I don't know, E. coli or, you know, one of the Ebola, right? What if it was Ebola?
I was thinking the same thing.
I go, well, if it's Ebola, that's a different situation. That's like a 98% kill rate. I'm like,
happen. And when it's something that was like eating your flesh, I think people are going to be like, yeah, I just stay home today.
And that's the thing is, and he asked, he goes, well, what's the number? What's the kill rate got to be? And I'm like, I don't have an answer to that.
No.
All I know is it's not this one. But again, if I was a senior who's high risk, yeah, you know what? I'd probably be staying home.
So the amount of misinformation that was coming from the CDC and the World Health Organization during this, It was funny because if you remember the vaccines, we've talked about this, how it flip-flopped. When Trump mentioned it, everybody laughed at him during the debate. I don't know if you remember. He mentioned during the debate.
Oh, yeah. No, it was called the Trump vaccine when he it was under his watch that it came out.
Yeah. And everybody, Kamala Harris, everybody is like, I would never take this. This is evil. I don't trust it. The second he got out of office, it became
mandatory,
And then
lose your job if you don't take it.
Yeah. Multiples, like all of a sudden the big pharma was in bed with the government in a big way. And then it became, you have to take it. Not, I would never take it. It became, I have to take it. And it's super effective. And it is our savior. And then you had Biden like boasting, I got this out more than Trump did. And everybody just flipped. Red, blue, right, left. Everyone just flipped overnight on the vaccine. And it was just, again, it just shows, like, I don't understand how our country keeps believing both sides. And I think the real issue is, like, we got to figure, like, it's going to happen again. The church has to decide, how's it going to work for you and I. I have to be honest, like, when it all was going down, I'm like, I just wrote about this a couple years ago. I just told the church, you need to get outside the building. You need to start learning to gather in public space, yada, yada. And, it was funny because I think most churches did a mixture, and they brought this up on the documentary, that they said, look, when people like Foyt were claiming, oh, you can't stop us from worshiping, this one guy, and I thought he was talking a lot of sense. He said, are you kidding? Every church went online suddenly. They found the ability to stream their services, and they went online, and money was flowing in. They didn't take cuts on their offering. And they found they could do everything virtually. And again, I remember.
And you and I said they're not coming back, too.
We did.
They're going to realize they can be a spectator sport and just watch it online.
Brother, I said that way back in Church Zero. Like, Church Zero was so freaking prophetic on that. And I said, if this doesn't make sense, wait 10 to 15 years and it will. I had no idea what I was saying was, hey, pandemic's coming in 10 years or less. And then the other thing was on Reaching the Unreached, that church in public space. Both of those books, in a weird way, ended up being somewhat prophetic. Without me realizing what was coming, how relevant the stuff from the early church would become. And of course, that's always been my prophetic edge when I'm writing, is that sense of, hey, we got to get back, right? Like Marty McFly and Doc Brown, we have to get back, Marty. We have to go back, it's Jack from Lost. Kate, we have to go back. That's what it is. Got my pop culture wires crossed there. But and so I think everybody kind of did that balance, right? Where part of the pandemic, they learned to go online. Then the other part, they learned to meet in their parking lot outside. And then they somehow mixed the two together. But people didn't come back the same.
Right? No, they didn't. And I mean, the thing too that I think we need to be aware of and conscious of, like when you talk about it's time to get outside the building, you can't necessarily do that in all parts of the country.
Right.
Like here in Texas, you're not meeting outside in the summer.
Right. Right.
In the winter, you're not meeting outside when it's 10 degrees out. You're not.
Yeah.
So there's a reason there are buildings here. Literally, we have the joke with my parents. I go, look, I go from air conditioned house to air conditioned car to air conditioned business. Like, I don't wait around outside because it's stinking hot. And in the winter, you go to heated home to heated car to heated business. Like, you're not doing anything outside. So you just have to be aware of that as well.
I think the key with all of this, if I were to summarize one final conclusion on this, I think the main thing that the church was facing was that we were being told, you mentioned casinos, certain restaurants, like people were still functioning, gas stations, liquor stores, ironically.
And marijuana stores in California.
Yeah.
They were considered essential.
the essential businesses, I think the key thing that the church was and still is facing was being told we were not essential.
Mm.
And I think if the church did have a fight that it did need to have with the government, it's we are essential and we will not be told we're not essential. We will social distance. We will mask up. Like I'm all for that, but don't tell us we're not essential. We are essential with the amount of suicide that happened. That's where the movie kind of started going with the bridge.
But see, here's the other thing too, though. Keep in mind, they wanted us to police each other. I mean, they even show the clip of the mayor of LA. Snitches get rewarded.
Right. They backtracked on that real quick. They kept overstepping, finding, oh, that's too far. And then they backtrack again.
But I mean, imagine what that did to our society, because that really encouraged the whole us versus them in the society. When you're supposed to snitch on your neighbor. So here's my point with that. Like if a church says, hey, look, if you want a mask, wear a mask, but I'm not going to police this. I'm not going to go in there and force you to wear a mask. If you don't want to wear a mask, you don't want to wear a mask. You know, and to me, it comes back to you can't pass on what you don't have.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you can't.
Listen, so, the mask for me just became fashion accessories. Dude, I was wearing.
Well, and you've also got a high-risk daughter. So you were very concerned about your high-risk daughter.
I will say this. It was funny because this is the first year ever my daughter did not end up hospitalized because we were social distancing. She just picks things up and it immediately becomes pneumonia because of a condition that she has that she was born with. But it was actually pretty amazing for us. We're like, oh, this is so nice. We're not in the hospital 2-3 times a year. This is great.
Yeah. Jamie used to tell the kids, she goes, you're not doing that because I'm not taking you to the hospital in the middle of COVID. And then Luke has an emergency surgery in the middle of COVID. And it was so funny. No, you can't do that because I'm not taking you to the hospital.
So rad. This is about my convenience, people. Yeah, I get that, man. Well, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, we found that, again, going back to the whole evangelist thing, it was evangelist. To me, watching the movie, it was the evangelist gone wild. And they need, this is why the church is grateful for the evangelist, because the evangelist was just get out there and do anything, right? But the church was like, hey, you're not exactly representing Jesus by doing this. You're representing one aspect of Jesus, but there are four other aspects of Jesus. There are four other functions. One of them's a shepherd, and going out there and massing together, it's not very shepherd-like, right? When people are afraid of dying, you might need to, you know, hey. And when you watch the clip and they're showing things, it's very much of the evangelist, like stomping. I always call it like the WWE. You know, like when they got the mic and they're stomping around stage, you know, hey, we're going to kick some butt on the devil tonight, you know, and they're boom, 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 you know, moving around and they're doing all the, you know, the body slam and the tough talk. And what I mean by tough talk is we will not, God is doing this and God, and it's all a bunch of, it's the hype train. And there's not a lot of substance to it. It's proclamation. It's, you know, but it's not balanced for me. Apostolically, I'm like, hey, I care about culture. Tim Keller. Well,
the thing too, though, that you gotta like, and as I look at it, I could understand why Sean was so like adamant for doing this, because while they're telling you you're not essential, they literally said, no, we think these protests for George Floyd are totally essential. This is an essential act. And it's like, okay, no. They're not social distancing. They're not, I mean, probably a lot were wearing masks. I have no idea. I just remember some of the clips, but it's clearly not social distancing, right? And so I can see the frustration of you're telling me I'm not essential and you're literally in the same breath going, but the protests are essential. That's an essential activity. We need to do that. Right. It was like, it was a powder keg. Like everyone was so like cooped up, ready to explode. All it took was that little match and like, boom, it went off.
Yeah. Yeah, we said that early on too. We predicted that. You and I both said, watch what happens when you cage people too long, right? It's, I mean, prisons now. Hey, you got to put it like you can break people. You isolate people too much. You know, you're going to break them and then you're going to have real problems in the prisons. So they started to limit solitary confinement because it was found to be counterproductive in long periods of time. And we basically created solitary confinement without the wisdom to know, hey, this is going to just make people go. You could see it like people and people couldn't handle that. They lost their freaking minds. Now, I'm not saying.
Here's the thing that they found too, is the spreading happened a lot within families, because if you think about it, you coop people up. They can't after a while. Look, I got to be around other people. So who do you get around? I'm going to get around family because I can trust family.
Right.
Well, yeah. And then one person's got it. Now y'all got it.
Right.
It's just, of course it's going to spread.
Well, and so here's the thing, right? Like George Floyd had my sympathy. I think it had the nation's sympathy. I don't see, regardless, you know, what like it showed, unfortunately, Foyt making statements like, oh yeah, hey, if you can gather around the life of the life and death of a drug addict, then you can gather around the life and death of Jesus. And it was like, dude, did you really say that during that moment? Did you not? And it's like when Jesus told the Pharisees, discern the times, right? Like that maybe wasn't like, you got to be careful, because if you're trying to gain this public platform and you're saying stuff like that, like I was offended. I didn't follow this dude on Twitter, but when I watched a documentary, I was deeply offended, even this far removed from it. I did not support the rioting. I did not support, you know, the looting and then all that stuff that happened, the burning of buildings. But I did support the anger. I did support the outrage, and still to this day do. I was glad that you and I both are probably no great fans of police brutality. That doesn't mean we're anti-police. I'm not anti-police. I think we need police. But again, in America, we just polarize so quickly on this without critical thinking. And I watched the reaction to it on the negative. There was a positive, and they mentioned what I got upset about was watching everyone else hijack the response to that. It was about one thing, suddenly became about LGBTQ. It became, and they brought up, one of the people brought up that, hey, you're hijacked. Like, because Foyt goes down into the heart of Minneapolis, in right near the George Floyd Memorial Square that they blocked off, and he throws his, and they're like, dude, what are you doing? Even when the Portland police officer called him very kindly and said, look, I'm asking you kindly. He said he asked like 13, 14 times. He said, I'm asking you very nicely, very politely, very kindly, please, we can't handle the city right now. Please don't do that. And they came anyways, and they got driven off. And it's like, why would you, like the police chief is calling, asking you, please, like, I don't know. It didn't sit right with me. You know, I mean, what's that police chief going to feel towards pastors, evangelists who want to do work in that city now? Right. Mm. When he's humbling himself and calling up and saying, hey man, it's, I'm not, yes, you have the right. That's what he's telling him. He was like, yes, you have the right to gather, but we're strapped right now. We have 13-year-old kids run around stabbing people right now. We have a gang of them, and we can't stop them. We don't know who they are. Like, it's chaos down there. Please don't come for your own safety. And like, to me, that's bonkers.
See, right? Okay. So in that situation, I think there's a way that you go in, but it's not by putting on an event.
Right.
The way that you go in is literally by being missionaries on the battlefield, so to speak.
That's what I'm saying.
And getting in with that community. It is literally like, you know, let's find the youth. Let's befriend the youth. It's not, let's put on a big event for sure.
I mean, there was one of the concerts and it shows like glitter bombs and fog cannons and all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, did you really go into these cities like that and like throw these big like laser light shows and stuff? And like, I don't know. It just, I don't know, brother. Maybe it just struck me as like, no. No, that is not, But you know, I'm always kind of funny about that stuff. So
no, and I get, see, the thing is, I get where the guy was coming from.
Because, I do.
Yeah. But I think you,
but I disagree. Mean,
well, I think, again, I think there's a time and a place for sure. Some of those, like when they went to, what do they call it? Chad or Chaz or whatever that.
Yeah. The chop zone.
That's what it was. Cause it kept changing names. It depends on who was in power.
Wasn't Portland the Chaz? Wasn't that the Portland area?
Seattle, wasn't it?
Was it? Okay. I thought the chop zone was Seattle. Yeah. Was maybe it was. I don't know.
I don't remember. All I remember is, you know, I remember when it was happening. Cause I remember they had taken over even the police station.
Yeah.
And it was lawlessness. It was complete lawlessness. There was nothing that could be done. And so he goes to that, right? And he's like, all right, we're going to put on a concert here. And that was the first time. Remember the wife was like,
yeah,
that was the first time I left because I was like scared.
She got surrounded by Antifa.
Yeah. And you remember like a lot of the immigrants, like we talk about the Russians, were like, no, this is how it all started.
Yeah.
They eat away at your freedoms and then it never comes back.
Right.
And see, I agree with that. And that's what they tried to do. And literally, if it wasn't for, again, like I said at the beginning, those judges that said, okay, no, the Constitution says you can't do this. You can't do this. But who knows what'll happen in the next one? Because now they've already got this precedent that we've done it before.
It's human nature. I mean, that all of that they're saying is human nature.
Yeah.
And one guy brought up, he said, the founding fathers knew this. That's why they created the government.
The three branches. Have.
Yeah. Well, like they knew that that leaders like to take more power. So they, you know, they try to. But hey, we're out of time. And Pete, I know that you have something that you definitely want to say, but let me say mine first. Hey guys, we got a training coming up. It's, hey, look at that training. Did you see that? Did you hear that? All right. Get on board, everybody.
Oh, I can't. Is your train going by? We couldn't hear.
My train went by. Yeah, he blew his whistle right outside my window. But anyways, we've got a bunch of trainings coming up. We have Church Plantology. It's a 10-week cohort. That's going to be starting up in September. We also have, and I actually have a link to give you today, so I'm very happy about this. We also have the first in our discipleship training called Ancient Pathways. It's part of our Disciple Like Jesus. It focuses on character. And maybe you or someone you know, you're discipling someone, you want to take them through an 8-week cohort, just head on over to newbreedtraining.com/cohorts. And you'll be able to see all the registrations. There's actually really just those two that are starting up in September. Love to have you. If you have any problems or you need a scholarship or something like that, let me know. Go ahead and drop us a line. We'd love to have you. And that's it. newbreedtraining.com/cohorts.
Hey there, bivocational pastors. Are you tired of spinning your wheels, trying to juggle your church duties and provide for your family? Well, hold on tight because I've got some game-changing news for you. It's time to unveil missionbybusiness.com, the holy grail of training programs crafted exclusively for bivocational pastors like you. We get it. Your time is sacred and you deserve a money-making solution that won't suck up every minute of your day. In just 9 short weeks, you'll become a powerhouse armed with the secrets to launch your own business using the mind-blowing force of artificial intelligence. Yep, AI is going to be your secret weapon. Now it's time to stop dreaming and start acting. Head over to missionbybusiness.com and feast your eyes on our masterclass video, which covers everything in much more detail. It's time to build a business that fuels your dreams, supports your church, and provides for your family. Don't wait another moment. Seize this opportunity with both hands. Head on over to missionbybusiness.com now.
Get to the church, blind! Get to the church, blind! Go now!
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you got to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.